Q and Review, celebrating 40 years of audio production, welcomes you to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Recorded from our studio in the Bishopbriggs Media Centre and by our volunteers working from home. Keep up to date with Q and Review news via our Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at Q and Review, that's @CUEANDREVIEW, or get in touch with us directly by emailing information@qandreview.com. That's information@CUEANDREVIEW.com, or by calling us on 0141 772 3979. Please like and share our podcast and give us constructive feedback.
Evening Times Sport, March 12. Aberdeen tipped to target foreign manager. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Aberdeen have been tipped to appoint a foreign manager for only the second time in their history, after bringing in renowned German specialist Bernhard Peters to carry out a review of their football setup. The Singe Premiership Club released a statement yesterday revealing the BPTC consultancy group, which is headed by Peters, had completed its audit and produced a report which will assist in the recruitment of a new first-team manager and the addition of a new technical director to support the director of football. Ebbe Skovdal, the Danish coach who was in charge at Pittodrie between 1999 and 2002, is the only man from outside of Great Britain and Ireland to manage the North East outfit in their 121-year existence. However, Derek Ray, the Dons fan, who is the lead Bundesliga commentator for ESPN and an expert on German football, suspects that former Hoffenheim and Hamburg Supremo Peters will have advised Aberdeen to talk to candidates on the continent. And Ray reckons the man who promoted current Germany manager Julian Nagelsmann from youth team to first team coach during his time at the Rhein-Neckar Arena may have identified a few interesting prospects to replace Barry Robson on a permanent basis. Ray said, "I would imagine, with Bernhard Peters involved now, that it probably opens the door to candidates who would not necessarily have been candidates for the Aberdeen job in the past. That would be my view. I would be surprised if Peters is not recommending people for Aberdeen to talk to. I am sure they have got their own candidates, but I don't think he will be recommending the usual suspects in Scottish football." Julian Nagelsmann has a pretty impressive CV. He is now the coach of Germany and was formerly the coach of Bayern and RB Leipzig, but he was the coach of Hoffenheim. It was Bernhard Peters and his colleagues who identified him as a youth coach with great potential. He paved the way for that ascension when he was just 28. That tells you a lot about the boldness there and the innovative thinking. A lot of other people would have dismissed the idea that somebody in his 20s could make his mark as a coach in the Bundesliga. Nagelsmann was let go by Bayern, but most Bayern fans now think that was a mistake. He will be in the dugout when Germany plays Scotland in the first game of the Euros in June. That is one high-profile example, and it is not the only one, of how Peters' innovative thinking has been of a benefit to German football. Whoever gets the manager's job, the technical director position at Aberdeen is important. That is one of the things which will come out of the review. A lot will flow from that in terms of their ideas going forward. I would imagine that will be somebody who has a lot of experience doing what Bernhard himself did years ago at Hoffenheim, a younger version, says Ray. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, March 12. Celtic release new kit to celebrate the club's Irish origins. Report by Ewan Payton. Celtic have released a new kit as part of its Irish origins collection, and on Monday the champions teased on social media that a new jersey was on its way. Now fans have been given a first glimpse of the new green and white shirt, which was modelled by both Matt O'Reilly and Liam Scales in their promotional posts. The new kit is mainly all green, with several white pinstripes. Like last year's Origins effort, the jersey again features a clover badge, with the trims of the shirt orange and white. The club has also released a clothing line as part of the strip launch, with polo shirts and hoodies available in similar styles. A statement on the Celtic website reads, "As a club famous for its proud Irish origins, Celtic FC are delighted to reveal our new 23-24 Adidas Irish Origins collection. This brand new and extended collection follows the phenomenal response to last year's 135th anniversary Origins kit, allowing supporters in Scotland, Ireland and beyond to celebrate our connections, past and present, with the Emerald Isle. An Irish identity is strongly woven into the fabric of Celtic Football Club, since Brother Walfred, himself an Irishman, founded the club back in 1887. Thousands upon thousands have sailed the Irish Sea to support the boys over the years. Their passion and that of the proud Irish players who have pulled on the hoops for Celtic, alongside the managers and coaches who have been written into the club's illustrious history, ensure that our Celtic connections are celebrated worldwide, then, now and always." Meanwhile, Rio Hatate is on course to return to action for Celtic after the international break, with manager Brendan Rodgers hoping to have the midfielder in his squad for the trip to face Livingston at the end of the month. Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, March 12. Scotland's squad for friendly doubleheader announced. Report by Ewan Payton. Steve Clark has announced his Scotland squad for the country's upcoming friendly doubleheader. In one of the last opportunities to work with his players before Euro 2024, Clark has named his squad for the games against the Netherlands and Northern Ireland. And it's a familiar-looking pool of players that the former Kilmarnock manager has picked as he looks to keep a settled team ahead of Germany this summer. The Scotland squad in full is goalkeepers Craig Gordon, Angus Gunn, Xander Clark, Liam Kelly. Defenders Andy Robertson, Jack Hendry, Ryan Porteous, Nathan Patterson, Scott McKenna, Greg Taylor, Liam Cooper, John Souter, Grant Hanley, Anthony Ralston, Kieran Tierney. Midfielders Billy Gilmer, Scott McTominay, John McGinn, Ryan Christie, Kenny McLean, Stuart Armstrong, Lewis Ferguson. Forwards Lyndon Dykes, Jay Adams, Lawrence Shankland. Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport. March 12. Hibs confirm away fan allocations reduced after Rangers clash. Report by David Irvin. Hibs Chiefs have moved to reduce away fan allocations at Easter Road after unacceptable behaviour from rival supporters. The board of directors will lower the number of away supporters at matches, with the decision announced after the Scottish Cup tie against Rangers. Hibs Chiefs condemned abhorrent behaviour and chanting from some supporters in Scottish football, and the club has acted after instances of pyrotechnics, sectarianism and objects being thrown on the pitch. Now the club will limit the number of away fans permitted for matches, but this will exclude the Edinburgh Derby against Hearts. A club statement read, Hibs FC condemns the abhorrent behaviour and chanting made by some supporters in Scottish football. Over recent years, supporters' unacceptable conduct has become rife in Scotland, whether that be through the use of pyrotechnics, sectarianism, objects being thrown onto the field of play, or through other actions. This is simply not good enough. Understanding that the behaviour of certain sections of Hibs FC's own support has not been good enough at times this season, the club has been taking the strongest possible action against those who behave in an unacceptable manner, working with Police Scotland and colleagues at other clubs. Hibs FC now implores other clubs to act in a similar fashion and the governing bodies to take serious consideration into the issues to ensure Scottish football is safe and welcoming for all. Following fan behaviour and chanting from opposing teams this season, the club's board of directors will be reducing the away allocation at Easter Road moving forward, alongside taking further actions. Football is a sport for all, and stadiums should be a place where families and friends can come together to support their team. Hibs prides itself on being a club for everyone, regardless of race, ethnicity, colour, gender, religion, creed, and sexual orientation. Everyone should be able to feel safe and comfortable attending a football match. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, March 12. Ali Miller earns first Scotland call-up. Glasgow back rower Ali Miller has been given his first Scotland call-up ahead of Saturday's Guinness Six Nations showdown with Ireland. The 27-year-old, who initially struggled to establish himself with the Warriors after arriving at Scotstoun from Edinburgh in 2021, has been rewarded by Gregor Townsend for his excellent form under Franco Smith this term. Miller joins up with the squad as fellow back rower Hamish Watson drops out, along with prop Jamie Batty and second rower Glenn Young. None of the forward trio were involved on Saturday as the Scots crashed to a damaging 31-29 defeat away to Italy. An update released by Scottish Rugby on Monday afternoon also revealed that 21-year-old Glasgow second rowers Alex Samuel and Max Williamson are training with the squad. Their more experienced Warriors second row colleague Scott Cummings, meanwhile, is adamant that Scotland will have no Rome hangover as they prepare for their championship concluding match away to Ireland. Had the Scots won in Italy at the weekend, they would be heading to Dublin this week for a title shootout with their hosts. Instead, the visit to the Irish capital has become an exercise in saving face for Townsend's under pressure team. If Scotland, currently third in the table, lose on Saturday, they will end the tournament with just 2 wins from 5 and could feasibly finish 5th if Italy defeat Wales this weekend. Said Cummings, "It's going to be a tough game. To get a win out there, we're going to have a 10 out of 10 performance. Ireland are one of the best teams in the world, and we've got to go to Dublin and try and put a performance in. We need to change one or two things from Italy and make sure we finish this campaign the way we want to and represent the country how we want to with the final performance." Scotland have not won in Dublin since 2010 and have lost each of their last 9 meetings with Ireland, including a chastening 36-14 World Cup pool stage defeat in Paris just 5 months ago. Asked how easily it would be for the Scots to rouse themselves for such a formidable match just a week after one of their worst results of Townsend's near 7-year reign, Cummings said, "Quite easily, to be honest. In the big games, the mentality takes care of itself. We remember that last game at the World Cup when we did not show up how we wanted to show up, and that still lives in our memories. There's going to be no shortage of motivation after Saturday's game and the last time we played Ireland, so we're excited for it. It is obviously going to be a tough challenge, but one we are ready to take on." Evening Times Sport, March 13. Lewis Ferguson given Scotland reality check. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Steve Clark is unsurprised Lewis Ferguson is being tipped to join one of the biggest clubs in Italy this summer, having been hugely impressed with the Scotland midfielder's form for Bologna in recent weeks. However, Clark has stressed the 10-times capped 24-year-old is not guaranteed to start in the national team's forthcoming matches against the Netherlands and Northern Ireland due to the strong options he has in the centre of the park. Ferguson has been linked with Serie A giants AC Milan, Inter Milan, Juventus, Lazio and Napoli in recent weeks as he has helped the Stadio Renato Dallara outfit to move into fourth place. The former Hamilton and Aberdeen player was involved in the Euro 2024 qualifiers against Georgia and Norway back in November, and is sure to feature in this month's friendly internationals. But Clark is, even though Ryan Jack and Callum McGregor are out injured, able to field Ryan Christie, Billy Gilmer, John McGinn, Kenny McLean and Scott McTominay in Ferguson's area of the pitch. And he said, "Lewis has just carried on in the same vein. He's playing really well and really consistently, game in, game out, and it looks like he's attracting a bit of attention. I watched his last game against Inter. They lost the game, but Lewis was good, as he always is. His performances are very consistent. He plays as a pressing number 10 and does it quite well, but I've used John McGinn in that position before. And Scott McTominay is actually playing in a very similar position for Manchester United at the minute. So I've got loads of pressing number 10s. Billy Gilmer is playing week in, week out at Brighton. And Ryan Christie has found another level of performance at Bournemouth now that they have tweaked his position a little bit. Then you've got the usuals, McGinn and McTominay. So it's a strong area of the pitch for us. Lewis understands the situation, and he understands that we're very strong in the midfield area. He knows he's got to be patient to get his chance, but I'm pretty sure when he gets his chance, he'll be ready for it. Meanwhile, Clark has stressed that he will only promote Scotland under 21 players to the senior setup if he loses more squad members to injury in the final round of matches before the international break. And he continued, "This weekend coming up is the worst. I just sit slumped with my head in my hands, thinking, don't get injured, don't get injured." As you look at this squad, it's quite short. We only have 21 outfield players and a lot of them are defenders. I could have boosted it with one or two of the younger ones. But I want to re-emphasise the fact that while I have my eye on the younger group, I think the under-21s should stick together and try and qualify out of their section for the under-21 Euro 2025 finals. Rather than calling some of them up to train with us, it's better that they go with Scott Gemmell and play. Obviously, if I go into this weekend and lose another couple of players, then I may need to dip down to Scott's squad and take one or two of the younger ones, but hopefully I won't have to. I'm not sure there is that much value in taking them to Euro 2024 if you're taking them just to be there and experience it. It might be better just to keep them a little bit hungry and let them think there's the carrot for the World Cup 2026. That's what the current 21 squad should be looking at, the next tournament. Can they try and be involved in that? Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, March 13. Martin Hannan asks, "Where have all of Scotland rugby's hard men gone?" If it wasn't for a duff decision by a TMO against France and a piece of unforgivable indiscipline by Pierre Schumann in Rome, Scotland would be going to Dublin this weekend with a real chance of winning the Guinness Six Nations Championship and the Grand Slam. Nobody saw that as a possibility at the start of the tournament, and lo, it did not come to pass, as the arithmetic says we cannot win the title. No use blaming individuals. The team failed to win two matches they should have won. And if you play as a squad, then you win or lose as a squad. A cliche, yes, but also a truism. At least we can see that this Scotland squad very much plays as a squad, and the teamwork in this tournament has been outstanding. Yet the losses indicate something I have felt about Scotland's performances in recent years. We are just not hard enough when it matters. Scotland should have won against France at Murrayfield and against Italy in Rome. But especially on Saturday, we let the Azzurri off the hook big style. Why? Because we don't kill off the opposition when we can. We don't pummel them when they are on the back foot. We don't send them off down the way to dusty death, figuratively speaking, of course. To win, to hammer the point of your superiority and demoralise the opposition, you need to be hard. And by hard, I don't mean dirty. In these days of all-seeing eyes, dirty play is usually always punished. And I can think of a few Scottish internationals of yesteryear who would have seen a plethora of red cards for their misdemeanours in the contemporary game. I am talking about physical toughness and mental commitment, which means total engagement up front, defending in stonewall fashion, and then taking responsibility for the attack from whatever position you occupy and carrying it through. Above all, it means being able to absorb the punishment and give it back to the opposition and then some. My definition of hard. I never saw David Beddow Sivrite, obviously, because he died during World War I. But he was reputedly the hardest Scottish player ever. and I would have loved to have seen the brilliant flanker W.I.D. Eliot in his pomp in the 1950s. But I did watch the likes of Jim Telfer, Ian Mighty Mouse McLaughlin, Sandy Carmichael, Ian the Bear Millen, Jim Aiken, Colin Deans, John Jeffrey, and my personal favourite hard man, Finlay Calder, dish it out and take it. There were plenty others in the 1970s through to the 1990s, with Gordon Brown, Norrie Rowan, Bill Dickinson and David Leslie, all players who were hard on the field and quite the opposite in person. All were tough characters. Nobody attacked them with impunity. Nobody thought for a minute that they would lay down to any opponent. I look at the contemporary Scottish squad, and while there are plenty tough individuals, I don't see any player who would genuinely call a hard man, certainly not the order of Mighty Mouse or the Bear. Battlers we have, yes, and thank goodness for it, but we need players with what coaches in the past called a bit of devil. I understand that expression, and played against plenty who had it. Hardness was often misunderstood as nasty and brutal, and modern rugby does not tolerate such people. That's a good thing. We really don't need players who tackle high, who smack opponents off the ball, who hit with a fly punch or stamp, invariably when the referee cannot see. What we do need is players who stand up to opponents, who drive into them, who make it public that they will live up to that old Scottish motto, "Wha dare meddle wi' me?" I don't think Scotland can develop a bit of devil before Dublin, but they have a very good reason for doing so, the Triple Crown. Ireland cannot win the Triple Crown of 2024, but Scotland, and only Scotland, can do so. Don't tell me it doesn't matter. It's just a hypothetical award. Because to beat the best of the home four nations is still worth fighting for. I know I tipped Ireland to get their second consecutive slam, but very few people foresaw that England would be their undoing. And yes, England deserved that victory at Twickenham in a game which ended with Ireland showing heavy legs and a touch of tiredness. They have been on a long and brilliant run, but they are knackered, and it showed. Problem is that Ireland need to defeat Scotland on Saturday to ensure that they win the championship, and I still think they will beat us. But wouldn't it be wonderful for Scotland to tear up the record books, play with gusto and spirit, and win the Triple Crown for only the 11th time, and the first since 1990? If you can't win a title, then making history is a very acceptable consolation, says Martin Hannan. Evening Times Sport, March 13. Golfers at Dalmuir say efforts will continue. Report by Ava White. Clydebank golfers have welcomed the news that the area's only public golf course has been saved from closure, but say this is only the start. On March 6, West Dunbartonshire Council, WDC, met to set its budget for 24-25. Councillors were presented with more than 50 money savings options to plug an £8.3 million budget black hole, one of which was to close or downsize Dalmuir Municipal Golf Course. This proposal was rejected. Following the announcement, Jerry Smith, Match Secretary at Overton Golf Club, one of several that play at Dalmuir, told the Glasgow Times he is delighted, but that there are discussions that now need to be had. Jerry said, "I am obviously delighted and we couldn't be happier, but it's only the start. Now we need to get all the clubs together with the council and discuss how to go forward with the course, rather than just leaving it how it is right now. The course could make money if it's invested in. When I say invested, I'm not talking about a lot of money, just enough to make sure it's up to a good standard where people will want to play it. It's been let slip over the last 2 or 3 years, which is why it has been losing money. Money could be recouped if more things were brought to it, such as amenities for people. There was a bowling club there, but that was shut down. It was supposedly going to be turned into a putting green by the previous pro, but he left, and that position was never filled, so it's just lying there doing nothing. There's also a cafe sitting there with rooms at the back of it. People could easily sit in there and have a cup of coffee, or even a drink, but there's absolutely nothing there right now. Jerry went on to explain that modern golf courses cater for much more than just a round of golf, and that he hopes Dalmuir will eventually be the same. The 51-year-old believes there are several development opportunities that could be taken at the landmark course, including transforming the current vacant cafe. And the Clydebank resident added, "Golf clubs now, they don't just cater for golf, they serve food, drinks, etc. With the summer coming up, people will be using Dalmuir Park with their kids. If the cafe was open, they could then go in there and get an ice cream for the kids and a coffee for themselves, or whatever. You can't even do that right now. It would bring more people in. Obviously, with the bowling greens at the back, they could easily be transformed into a putting green. The council could charge 50p or £1 for kids to go on and have a wee shot of putting. It could help them get into golf as well. These are things that nobody is interested in. If the books say the balance is minus, they, WDC, just think, well, how can we get rid of that? Instead of saying, how can we make this better? And how can we make it so it's making money?" Report by Eva White. Evening Times Sport, March 13. Steve Tandy on Scotland's hard-hitting review of Italy loss. Steve Tandy revealed Scotland have held a hard-hitting review into Saturday's damaging Guinness Six Nations defeat by Italy, as they bid to summon a response away to title-chasing Ireland this weekend. The Scots Championship hopes went up in smoke in Rome as they squandered a 22-10 lead to lose 31-29 against an Azzurri side who, for all their perceived improvement, had not previously won a match in the tournament since 2022. Defence coach Tandy revealed the players and coaches had a frank debrief on Monday as they attempt to iron out the issues that cost them so dearly at Stadio Olimpico. "Obviously, huge frustration and disappointment. A lot of looking at ourselves and what we did," said Tandy, as he gave an insight into the mood in the Scottish camp. "Italy are a good team, but when you look back at it, there are definitely things we could and should have done better. So there's been a lot of looking inwards. It was a pretty quiet place after the game, and then coming in on Monday, the review was hard-hitting. The boys have reflected. They've looked at the footage. They've fed back themselves. We had a pretty good meeting, as much as it could be good after a loss." Tandy felt Scotland were uncharacteristically soft defensively in Italy, but he refused the suggestion they lack the mental strength to deal with periods of adversity. And he pointed out, "We have shown moments of regathering ourselves, such as in Wales where we got the momentum back at the back end of the game to get the win. Against England we were 10-0 down after the disappointment of the previous game against France, where everyone said we should have won the game. So getting over that to beat England shows we've got the mental capacity to do those things. But it's always a work in progress. There's always space to learn and grow. These losses hurt, and they make us ask questions around certain things. But at the end of the day, we've got a huge game on Saturday, so we cannot dwell on it for too long. We are going to lose momentum in Ireland. No team goes there and dominates. We are going to be under pressure for a lot of the game, and we've got to deal with that. In a lot of the competition, we've dealt with it. There are moments when we haven't dealt with it, but we're learning all the time to try and deal with those situations more consistently. Scotland's defeat in Italy effectively cost them the chance of a title decider against Ireland in Dublin, but they still have the chance to claim a triple crown for the first time since 1990 if they can defeat the side that dismantled them 36-14 at the World Cup in October. Said Tandy, "I forgot about the triple crown after Saturday night, to be honest, but we're playing for a trophy. I don't know how many years it is since we have been playing for a trophy. That's the beauty of sport, the fact you can be down at the lowest of lows, but now we have the potential to be at the highest of highs, which is exciting for us. We know we're going to have to play really well to get what we want, but it's a game. Anything can happen." Evening Times Sport, March 14. Celtic's hopes hang on fitness of Carter Vickers. Report by Graeme McGarry. It is sometimes easy to forget that Celtic splashed out the best part of £8 million on just two central defenders last summer. Neither Gustav Lagerbelke nor Mike Norocki have managed to make an impression on Brendan Rodgers' starting 11 on anything approaching a regular basis. In fact, neither have managed to climb above Liam Scales or Stephen Welsh in the pecking order of the central defenders at the club, never mind live up to their price tags, which is as damning an indictment on their respective abilities as it is to the recruitment process that brought them to the club at such cost. Perhaps one or both will come good at the club in due time, but that is a commodity that is in short supply for Celtic. They need tried and trusted performance in the here and now as they enter the critical final stretch of the season, with the thin thread by which their hopes of success hang laid bare in the absence of Cameron Carter-Vickers against Livingston at the weekend. The partnership of Scales and Welsh that were on display was full of honest endeavour, but the chasm in the quality they possess to Carter-Vickers is stark. Defensively, Livingston were able to trouble them, of course, scoring twice at Celtic Park and fashioning a couple of other presentable opportunities that could have made a dicey situation at the club a disastrous one had they been converted. More than that, though, the absence of Carter Vickers has a huge knock-on effect in the entire setup of the team, something that Rodgers himself has alluded to. Carter Vickers is often the catalyst for Celtic's attacks with his forward passing. Without him, there were far too many balls played across the back line at the weekend, and even then, many of them were played behind their target, slowing down the attacking phase before it had even got going. The fact they were also missing captain Callum McGregor was an added issue in getting the ball through the pitch, but the fact that the defensive line was having to sit deeper to compensate for the absence of the pace of Carter Vickers has also caused a problem going the other way, opening up spaces in the field that otherwise would not have been available for Livingston to play in. So, without the American international, Celtic are not only susceptible to attacks from the opposition, but are diminished too when they are in possession. They become disjointed, less sure of themselves, and a lesser team. That is to Carter Vickers' great credit that he has become so indispensable. But it is to Celtic's detriment that they are so reliant on one player, particularly as his entire campaign has been plagued by a spate of injuries caused by underlying issues associated with his knee operation in the summer. In short, it is little wonder that in a season when Carter Vickers has been available for selection on such an inconsistent basis, that Celtic have been so inconsistent. It was with some palpable relief that Rodgers was able to relay some positive news to supporters yesterday regarding the fitness of his star defender, with the Celtic manager confirming that his precautionary absence from the side for the Scottish Cup win looks to have eased his hamstring issue. Rodgers said, "We will have a look at Cameron Carter-Vickers for Saturday's game against St Johnstone. He should be fine. It was a precaution. I spoke to Cam at length this morning. He just feels everything is based from around his knee operation. Also, when you have picked up a few injuries from that, you get that sensation and think it's linked to another injury. Thankfully, it doesn't seem to be that. We have had the scan, which has come through fine. He's done some work with the medical team, and hopefully he will rejoin the training squad on Thursday and Friday." Celtic have 9 league games left to play, as well as 2, they hope, in the Scottish Cup. If they are to emerge from this season with a domestic double, despite their frequent troubles, they will undoubtedly need Carter Vickers to be present for the vast majority of them. The trouble is, his longest run of games this term was the 5 consecutive matches he managed between November and early December. He has missed 12 of Celtic's 29 league games and has yet to play in the Scottish Cup. His chances of suddenly finding the physical robustness required to lead his team to glory seem slim, but their chances of glory seem to hinge upon it, says Graham McGarry. Evening Times Sport, March 14. Ferguson confident Clement will be given strong Rangers transfer kitty. Report by Robbie Hanratty. Former Rangers captain Barry Ferguson is confident Philippe Clement will be given a hefty cheque to spend in the summer, regardless of their European success. Rangers face Benfica tonight, knowing a victory would see them go one step closer to a £40 million windfall. Clement has transformed the Ibrox mood since replacing Michael Beale last autumn and has already guided the club to Viaplay Cup success, with the Scottish Cup, Premiership and Europa League still to play for. Ferguson has liked what he's seen from the Belgian boss this far and reckons the January acquisitions of Oscar Cortez, Fabio Silva and Mohamed Diamond has shown he can be trusted to build his own side. He told the Go Radio Football Show, "It would be a massive bonus if they do win it because, as you just mentioned, there's a £40 million prize. I am sure the vast majority of that will go towards the manager. I still believe if that's not the case and they don't win the tournament, then he will still get backed because I do think there's a lot of trust in him. You see the 3 signings he's made in January. Oscar Cortes, albeit he suffered that injury down at Rugby Park, he looked good, no doubt about it. Fabio Silva, you are starting to see him produce the goods. And Mohamed Diamant, who I think is just only going to get better and better. He's one of these players. That's the model that Rangers are trying with bringing in players. I think it's around the £4 million mark to make it permanent in the summer. He's one of those guys down the line, whether it's a year or two, that they can go and treble their money. Report by Robbie Hanratty. Evening Times Sport, March 14. Historic item from Rangers vs Benfica game to go under the hammer. Report by Ben Waddle. An historic item from a famous Rangers vs Benfica game is set to go under the hammer in Glasgow. A 76-year-old match programme from one of Rangers' first post-war fixtures overseas is expected to change hands for a four-figure sum when it goes under the hammer next month. The 16-page publication produced for the Ibrox club's friendly against today's Europa League last 16 opponent, Benfica, in Lisbon on February 10, 1948, will be given a guide price of between £800 and £1,200 when details go live online tomorrow ahead of its auction at Glasgow's Trades Hall on April 10. It has been described by auctioneer and sporting memorabilia specialist David Convery as one of the rarest Rangers and indeed Scottish post-Second World War match programme in existence. Even allowing for the fact the spine has been taped, Scottish football memorabilia enthusiasts forecast that the programme, printed in an era of paper rationing across the world, will appeal to many Rangers collectors and fetch significantly more than the reserve price. It fell into the hands of fledgling Edinburgh collector Neil Brown when gifted to him by his Sunday school teacher as part of a random batch of programmes in the early 1960s. The now 70-year-old Hearts supporter has no idea how such a rare item made its way back to Scotland following a match some 2.5 years after the end of the war, in which few of a Rangers persuasion beyond team and officials were in attendance. Said Brown, "When I was 11 years old, my Sunday school teacher found out I'd started collecting programmes and brought in a bag of about 15 old programmes for me. I had no awareness at that point that it would be of any value in the future, because in those days I was just collecting as a hobby. It was only probably in the 1980s, when people started to take a real interest in the value of such things, that I started to realise the significance of this particular programme and how rare it might be. I have collected all kinds of sport and music memorabilia over the years, such as comics, magazines, vinyl and football programmes, and it has all got a bit out of control. It has been fantastic to own such a rare item for so long, but I've been trying to downsize for some time. So now, unfortunately, is the time for it to go and let someone else enjoy it." Brown contacted the auctioneers in January, and by sheer coincidence, his prize programme, with a cover price of one escudo, will be going under the hammer just weeks after Benfica and Rangers were reunited in the Europa League. The two sides are tied at 2-2 ahead of tonight's second leg at Ibrox. Their encounter at Lisbon's Estadio Nacional 76 years ago was the first ever meeting between the clubs, and it represented Rangers' second post-war match overseas. Their first was against the Combined Services in Hanover in October 1945. Bill Struth's Rangers side defeated the Portuguese 3-0 in front of an estimated crowd of 60,000, with Jimmy Duncanson scoring twice and Willie Thornton also on target. As a romantic aside, former Rangers player and manager Willie Waddle met his wife Hilda when she was working as an air hostess on the flight to Lisbon for the match. Report by Ben Waddle. Evening Times Sport, March 14. James Fowler appointed to new Rangers Academy position. Report by Ewan Payton. James Fowler has been appointed as the new head of Academy Scouting and Recruitment at Rangers. The Kilmarnock legend is back in football 18 months after leaving his role at the Rugby Park Club. It emerged in January this year that the 43-year-old was the front runner for the position. It is understood that he's carried out some coaching work with the club's academy since leaving Killy, the team he spent the vast majority of his career with. Now, while Rangers have yet to officially announce the appointment, Fowler has updated his LinkedIn profile with his new job title. The head of the club's academy, Zurab Amirian, had been tasked with overseeing an overhaul of the youth system at Auchenhowie. It seems he's got his man in terms of recruitment. Fowler has a plethora of experience in football since retiring as a player. He managed Queen of the South before spells as assistant to Jack Ross at St Mirren and Sunderland. Fowler then returned to Kilmarnock, where he won the League Cup in 2012. As their head of football operations in 2019, he oversaw the firing of Angelo Alessio while hiring and firing both Alex Dyer and Tommy Wright. With two caretaker spells in charge of his boyhood club, Fowler is then credited with bringing Derek McInnes to Rugby Park in January 2022. After a short spell working with the 52-year-old, as Killy lifted the championship title, he left the Ayrshire side with Russ Richardson replacing him. Evening Times Sport, March 15. Clement explains Rangers' corner trouble against Benfica. Report by David Irvin. Philippe Clement has explained a wrong decision led to Benfica's goal against Rangers. The Ibrox boss admitted a mistake from Mohamed Diamond allowed Rafa Silva to race clear and score the winner in the Europa League. Rangers conceded the decisive goal just seconds after their own corner as Angel Di Maria nodded through to Rafa to slam into the bottom corner. On the goal, Clement explained, "We made a wrong decision. If Diamond just goes with the attacker, nothing happens in that situation. But he is still a young player who plays for the first time at this level, and he played a really good game." Pushed on whether his side were left exposed from their own corners, Clement said, "Because they have a lot of quality, that's one thing. And the goal we got against us, we made the wrong decision. I don't think they created a lot of chances. We had a counter-attack in the first half on set pieces." Ali McCoist said of the goal, "That cannot happen from your own corner. I don't care who you are or what level you are. I'm afraid to say that cannot happen at any level of football. That is your corner and two passes and Rafa Silva, who in my opinion I thought was the best player on the pitch, all of a sudden he is through with the goalkeeper to beat. You have got to call it as you see it. I think it is a terrible goal to lose defensively. I think this Rangers team did themselves proud over the two legs. But in that particular situation, that little bit of analysis, they got one or two warnings in the first half. that wasn't a one-off. I reckon it was two or three times in the first half where Rangers have got a corner in the wide area and I'm looking and they've not got a defender 50 or 60 yards from their own goal. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, March 15. Talking points ahead of Ireland versus Scotland meeting in Dublin. Report by Martin McMillan. Ireland are within touching distance of retaining the Guinness Six Nations title ahead of hosting Scotland. Andy Farrell's men were denied potential back-to-back Grand Slams by last weekend's 23-22 defeat to England, but remain in pole position to win the tournament. Here, the PA news agency picks out some of the main talking points ahead of tomorrow's match in Dublin. Ireland's title to lose. Ireland know victory or a draw will guarantee championship glory, while two losing bonus points would also be sufficient. Any other result would complicate matters and open the door for England to snatch the title. Steve Borthwick's side, who begin the weekend 4 points off the pace, require a bonus points win away to France in the final fixture of Super Saturday on the back of halting Ireland's 100% record. Scotland and Les Bleus are also mathematically still in the title mix. However, their respective hopes of finishing top of the table are highly improbable due to Ireland's vastly superior points difference. What might have been? The Aviva Stadium clash should arguably be a straight shootout for the title and could easily have been a Grand Slam showdown. Ireland were seconds away from remaining on track for a clean sweep before Marcus Smith's last-gasp drop goal settled a Twickenham thriller. Scotland, meanwhile, are likely to still feel aggrieved about their controversial Round 2 loss to France, which was sandwiched between wins over Wales and England. The Scots campaign subsequently unravelled in disastrous fashion with a shock 31-29 defeat to Italy, clinching a first triple crown since the 1990 Five Nations appears to be the only realistic achievement available to Gregor Townsend's men amid a lingering sense of what might have been. Testing time for Townsend. A major setback at Stadio Olimpico cast fresh doubt on the future of Scotland head coach Townsend. His side have produced plenty of statement results, including four consecutive Calcutta Cup victories, but he has also overseen successive World Cup pool stage exits. While frustrating inconsistency means that the Scots' wait for a maiden Six Nations title goes on. The 50-year-old, whose contract runs until 2026, refused to entertain questions about his position after a calamitous second-half collapse in the Italian capital. Townsend insists he still believes in his players and will be desperate to end the championship by lifting silverware to alleviate mounting pressure. Decade of dominance. Ireland continued their dominance of Scotland at last year's Rugby World Cup in France. Ireland have played pivotal roles in Scotland's recent underwhelming World Cup campaigns during a decade of dominance of this fixture. At the 2019 tournament in Japan, the Irish began with a 27-3 win over Townsend's men in Yokohama before emphatically eliminating their rivals in France last year thanks to a crushing 36-14 Paris success. Ireland have won 13 of 14 meetings between the nations since 2014, including 9 on the spin, following a 27-22 Murrayfield loss in 2017. They are strong favourites to extend that streak as Scotland bid to become only the second away side after France in 2021 to triumph in Dublin during the Farrell era. Concussion concerns. Ireland's unchanged starting 15 raised some eyebrows, given Calvin Nash was forced off following a thunderous collision with England's Tommy Freeman just 6 days ago. Concussion protocols remain a hot topic, but Farrell insists he trusts the medical experts as he moved to allay any concerns surrounding the Munster wing. The Englishman has also ditched his 6-2 split of forwards and backs on the bench in favour of a more conventional 5-3 selection. The bold call backfired in London due to head injury assessments dictating the withdrawals of Nash and his replacement Kieran Frawley, who is not fit to feature this weekend. Evening Times Sport, March 15. Celtic midfielder O'Reilly called up to Denmark squad, report by David Irvin. Celtic midfielder Matt O'Reilly has been called up to the Denmark national team. The 23-year-old has been added after Christian Norgaard pulled out through injury. Denmark face Switzerland and the Faroe Islands later this month, with O'Reilly originally set to miss the matches. However, he will now be involved for his country as he replaced injured Norgaard in the pool. A Denmark national team update confirmed. Unfortunately, Christian Norgaard has to cancel the matches in March with an injury. National coach Kasper Hulmand has selected Celtic's Matt O'Reilly instead. Welcome to the squad, Matt, and get well soon, Norgaard. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, March 15. Old Firm on alert over UEFA coefficient predicament. Report by David Irvin. Scotland's UEFA coefficient is at risk of falling outside of the top 10, meaning the guaranteed Champions League qualification spot is at risk, putting Celtic and Rangers on alert. For the past two seasons, the winners of the Scottish Premiership have advanced straight into the group stage of the competition due to Scotland's relatively high country coefficient. It has meant Celtic have automatically been included in the group stage draw due to Scotland being within the top 10 country coefficients and eliminating the need for any qualification rounds. However, that could all change, meaning next season's title winners could still face qualification rounds for the competition. That is because the Czech Republic are just one result away from leapfrogging Scotland and taking the all-important top 10 spot. The Czechs have just Viktoria Plzeň left in the Europa Conference League this season, but just one draw from the two quarterfinal matches and Scotland would be overtaken in the UEFA coefficient standings. While it still makes for bleak reading with Plzeň within striking distance, their draw is yet to be made in the tournament. It could have been worse had Sparta Prague or Slavia Prague advanced in the Europa League last night. Both teams lost and were eliminated from the Europa League. That would mean the automatic Champions League spot would be taken by the Czech leagues and leave the winners of the Scottish Premiership title next season still facing qualifying rounds to make the Champions League proper. It would also see the second place side have to go through two qualifying rounds to make it into the hat for the group stage of the tournament instead of just one. One caveat, however, could see Rangers still go straight into the Champions League group stage, even if Scotland drop from the top 10 of the UEFA coefficient. That is due to an impressive club coefficient for the Ibrox club, currently ranked 25th in Europe. This means Rangers would likely still make automatic group stage qualification should they win the league title next season, thanks to their previous performance in European competition. Celtic or any other Scottish club would have to go through qualifying for the Champions League should they win the title, and the Czech Republic have taken the coveted top 10 UEFA country coefficient spot. Report by David Irvin.
From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 16th of March, from the sports section, Celtic 3, St Johnstone 1. Instant reaction to the burning issues. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Celtic leapfrogged Rangers into top spot in the Saints Premiership table at Parkhead this afternoon when they strolled to a comfortable 3-1 win over St Johnstone thanks to goals from Kyogo Furuhashi, Nicholas Kuhn and James Forrest. If their Ibrox rivals defeat Dundee tomorrow afternoon at Dens Park, where they triumphed 5-0 in their last visit to Tayside back at the start of November, they will fall 2 points behind once again. However, the Govan club, who had a mentally and physically draining Europa League match against Benfica on Thursday evening, will certainly be feeling under a little more pressure to perform in the lunchtime fixture after this result. Furuhashi put the defending Scottish Cup champions ahead 6 minutes before half-time, Kuhn doubled their lead earlier in the second half, and Forrest came off the bench and added a third. Conor Smith pulled one back for the visitors with 9 minutes remaining, after Joe Hart had saved a Stevie May header, but the final outcome was never in doubt. Here are 5 talking points from the encounter. Celtic class. Brendan Rodgers had been far from happy with how his charges had acquitted themselves in the Scottish Gas Scottish Cup quarter-final win over Livingston last Sunday, despite the 4-2 triumph they recorded. Whatever the Northern Irishman said to his charges during training at Lennoxdown this week, in the wake of the flat display, clearly had the desired impact. They were much approved against St Johnstone today. The McDermott Park club kept the scoreline level for nearly 40 minutes, but Cameron Carter-Vickers, Daisa Maeda and Tomoki Iwata all had shots cleared off the line, and Dimitar Mitov also palmed a powerful volley from Iwata wide before Furuhashi broke the deadlock. Celtic were up against struggling opponents whose ambition this term is simply to remain in the division. Still, they played with a far better tempo and much more creativity. Their manager will be looking for more of the same when the club football resumes after the international break. Furuhashi Fizz. The Japanese internationalist has not, despite plundering 15 goals for club and country in the 2023-24 campaign, been his usual effervescent and ruthless self up front in the last few months. Norwich City loanee Adam Ida was preferred to the PFA Scotland and Scottish Football Writers Association of the Player of the Year in the games against Motherwell, Hearts and Livingston. But Furuhashi came on and netted in the triumph over the latter last weekend, and he was restored to the starting lineup this afternoon. He really should have broken the deadlock when Kuhn sent him through and Mitov with a lob over the top of the St Johnstone defence. He took too many touches and squandered the chance. He had the ball in the back of the net moments later when he dove and chested a Paul Bernardo cross in from a few yards out, but assistant referee Callum Spence raised his flag immediately and a VAR check subsequently proved him correct. Furuhashi, though, stuck at it and was rewarded for his perseverance 5 minutes before half-time. He got on the end of another Kuhn delivery and headed home. On this occasion, the new technology showed he was not offside. Scorer turned provider and provider turned scored in the first minute of the second half. Furuhashi squared across goal and Kuhn had the simplest of tasks to side foot beyond Mitov. The striker put in a power of work in the final third. He chased down every ball and did not give the St Johnstone defenders a second to relax. He received a standing ovation when he made way for Ida with 20 minutes left on the clock. Could the rest he has received mean he's back to his very best for the run-in? On this evidence, it is a possibility. CCV confidence. Celtic fans were relieved to see Cameron Carter-Vickers, who missed the Livingston Cup tie due to a minor niggle, back in the side at the centre-half today. The United States internationalist dovetailed well with Stephen Welsh in the absence of Liam Scales, and dealt comfortably with the limited threat which the Perth club posed going forward. The defender, who has donned the captain's armband while Cal McGregor has been sidelined, is so important to the Glasgow club. His teammates seem to take confidence from his considerable presence at the back. Keeping him fit is so important for Celtic. Iwata composure. Celtic have lost their talismanic skipper McGregor at the worst possible time, but there was nothing wrong with how the midfield three performed today. Bernardo, Iwata and Matt O'Reilly bossed proceedings. Iwata sat deep in a 4-1-4-1 formation and pulled the strings for his side. His distribution was excellent and his reading of the game intelligent. He was, too, unfortunate not to score on a couple of occasions, not least in injury time when he headed over from close range. The former G League Player of the Year has big boots to fill, but he's growing into the role with every game and starting to fulfil the potential he showed when he first arrived on these shores last year. Saints alive! Having put in a 4-game losing run in the Premiership behind them with a win over Aberdeen away and a draw with Livingston at home, St Johnstone travelled to Glasgow in slightly better spirits. Sven Spranger, limping off injured midway through the first half, following a collision with Daisy Maeda, did nothing to help their cause. But Craig Levein's men were well beaten today. Celtic keeper Joe Hart only had one save of note to make during the course of the 90 minutes. His opposite number, Mitov, who tipped a dipping Matt O'Reilly free kick over his crossbar at 2-0, kept the scoreline semi-respectable for the visitors. With Ross County recording a surprise 2-1 victory over the third place Hearts at home, St Johnstone are now just a point above the second bottom Dingwall club, with 8 games remaining. The heat is well and truly on. And that article was by Matthew Lindsay. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 16th of March, from the sports section, Celtic boss Rodgers drops Rangers quip over St Patrick's Day plans. By David Irvine. Celtic manager Brendan Rodgers has revealed he won't watch Rangers against Dundee. That's because he'll be busy celebrating St Patrick's Day. The Parkhead manager explained he would have no interest in Scottish Premiership action on Sunday and would instead focus on the celebration of the Irish community worldwide. Celtic leapfrogged Rangers at the Scottish Premiership Summit with a 3-1 win over St Johnstone on Saturday, but Philip Clement's men could regain the lead at Danes Park. Quizzed on whether he'd keep tabs on the match in Dundee, Rodgers told Sky Sports, "Well, it's St Patrick's Day tomorrow, so I'll be celebrating St Patrick's Day. There'll be a celebration of the Irish community worldwide. I won't have any interest in any results. We've done our job today, and that's all we can do, and we'll have a good gate day tomorrow." On victory over St Johnstone, Rodgers said, "I thought from the start of the game there was a great feeling in the stadium and from the crowd. The players started the game well, and I thought overall it was a very good performance. The only downside was when I made all the changes, our pressing went a little bit passive, and that gave them a little bit more time on the ball than we would have wanted." And, touching on the progress made by January signing Nicholas Cunn, Rodgers added, "I think you are starting to see a little bit of why we brought him here. He's very quick. It was just hard for him when he came in, struggling with his teeth and everything medically, but he has shown now that he has strength back up and he's training really well." He obviously puts in a great cross for the first goal, and you see his speed for the second one. We always want our wingers to get in the box. He got himself in there and scored a fantastic goal. And that article was written by David Irvine. From the Glasgow Times, 17th of March, from the sports section, Clement defends ref over Dundee vs Rangers call-off. By David Irvine. Philip Clement has defended Don Robertson's call to postpone the match between Dundee and Rangers as the right decision. The Ibrox boss was left disappointed over the late call-off just 90 minutes before the scheduled Scottish Premiership fixture. And Clement bemoaned the match being the sole call-off in Scotland, despite also being selected for live Sky Sports coverage. However, the Belgian took no issue with Robertson's decision to postpone the match, as he defended the decision despite his disappointment. He told BBC Scotland, "I understand the referee. Totally, he made the right decision. You cannot play football on this surface. I think it is clearly in the rules of football that if you throw a ball in the air and it doesn't bounce, you cannot play a game. And then we don't even speak about the safety of the players. You cannot have any stability on this field at this moment. It is a strange thing to have this. I understand if it is 2-3 weeks constant pouring rain, but after maybe one night of rain, to have these circumstances means there was already a problem." Clement added, "It is really dangerous for injuries. We can say yes, 50 or 60 years ago, football was played in these kind of pitches. And that's true, but there has been an evolution as in those times they also played the game with laces in the football. I think it's a very important thing for the future that a league thinks about how to raise the level of pitches and put standards on that, like they do other things. They have standards with things like lighting, for example, to have a good broadcast of the game and to have a good product. Sure, the lights are really important, but even more important is the quality of the pitches, I think." And that report was by David Irvine. From the Glasgow Times, 17th of March, from the sports section, Rangers release scathing statement after Dundee match postponed. Report by David Irvine. Angry Rangers chiefs have released a scathing statement in response to the match against Dundee at Dens Park being postponed 90 minutes before kick-off. Club officials were left extremely disappointed and angered after the Scottish Premiership match, due to be broadcast on Sky Sports, was called off after players and fans had arrived. Don Robertson deemed the match unplayable due to a waterlogged pitch after a second pitch inspection at 10:15 a.m. The ball would roll on the surface but would not bounce. Rangers chiefs were left furious over the situation, with players and staff inside the stadium and supporters arriving in Dundee for the match before confirmation of the call-off. And the club have questioned why no concerns were raised over the playing surface before Sunday morning. And the statement cites reoccurring issues at Dens Park over the pitch, with previous matches postponed at the venue after heavy rainfall. The club correspondence went on to state that the call-off reflects poorly on our game as the only match postponed in the UK this weekend. A Rangers club statement read, "Rangers FC, on behalf of our supporters, are extremely disappointed and angered with the late call-off of today's match with Dundee FC. The first team had prepared as normal for the match, and it was not until this morning that any concerns over the playing surface were raised. It is not understood why the home club did not raise those concerns in a more timely manner, given the reoccurring issues they have had with their playing surface at earlier points in the season. The Rangers team and thousands of our supporters had already arrived at the stadium by the time a decision was reached. This is the only match in an entire UK senior leagues to be postponed this weekend, and given it was to be shown on Sky Sports nationwide, reflects poorly on our game." And that report was by David Irvine.
Evening Times Sport, March 18. Scottish women's clubs must be brave, bold and believe to follow Arsenal's success, says Alison McConnell. Kevin Costner fans will remember the "if you build it, they will come" mantra from the cheesy 1989 movie Field of Dreams. For shoeless Joe Jackson and Archie Moonlight Graham, substitute the ghosts of yesteryear in women's football into their own Fenway Park as they get the chance to play games inside proper stadia. Last month, Ibrox hosted Rangers versus Celtic, while Celtic announced on Friday afternoon that Celtic Park will host SWPL games against Hearts and Hibs in April and in May. Last year, Celtic knocked the record SWPL attendance out of the park with a crowd of 15,822 for the last game of the season last May, as they missed out on their first title by minutes. Across the city, Rangers had just under 10,000 inside Ibrox for their game against Glasgow City on the same day as the Petershill side clinched the championship. And when it comes to growing the game and sustaining the interest that the Scottish women's game witnessed towards the frantic end of last season, there is a strong argument to suggest that the more commonplace it becomes to play games in the natural home of the club, the better it is for the growth and development. The obvious body of evidence for such an argument would come from Arsenal. For the first time in its history, this season the Emirates sold out 60,000 tickets for back-to-back WSL fixtures as they took on Manchester United and then Tottenham Hotspur. It came following last season's sellout for the UEFA Women's Champions League semi-final against Wolfsburg. A decade earlier, the same fixture had attracted a sparse crowd of 1,406. But while other clubs may look at Arsenal and aim to emulate just how they have achieved such numbers, the bottom line is that it has not been a quick return from a recent investment. Back in the 1990s, when David Dean proposed that Arsenal set up a women's team, people questioned whether or not he was being serious. They asked if it was a publicity stunt. This last week, at a Women in Football event, Dean suggested that owners have to show bravery, commitment and vision. They have to speculate to accumulate. When Arsenal played Chelsea at the Emirates 3 years ago, there were 8,000 people. Now there are 60,000. You've got to be brave. Be bold, he said. The point is that Arsenal are now on the cusp of reaping the rewards of an investment and initiative that has been 30-odd years in the making. It has not been an overnight success. Crucially, they have stuck with it. Even when there were small attendances at the Emirates, they have shown a faith and longevity to invest in their women's side with a belief that it would be a slow burner. What they are witnessing now is the success of that belief. In Scotland, Glasgow City deserve enormous credit for the vision that brought about their very formation, simply because at the time, so few male teams offered female pathways, female coaching, female academy structures. But even now, there remains a suspicion that for many clubs, their women's side is there for the optics rather than for any serious investment or promotion. To that end, it remains so important that there is excitement and intrigue in what happens in the league. Last season, as Fiona McIntyre was followed by Sky Sports cameras, as the title was in the balance until the closing minutes of the season, there was a captive intrigue in the women's game that had not been seen before. That excitement can only benefit the profile of the league, but all clubs have their part to play in ensuring the game is moving in the direction it should, says Alison McConnell. Evening Times Sport, March 18. Townsend eyes consistency for Scotland. Report by Ed Elliott. Gregor Townsend insisted Scotland have proved they are capable of being genuine Guinness Six Nations title contenders as he reflected on what might have been following a frustrating bottom half finish. The Scots showed plenty of promise during an inconsistent campaign, but slipped to fourth place in the final standings after being denied a first triple crown in 34 years by Saturday's 17-13 loss to Champions Ireland. defeating Dublin was a third from five championship fixtures, following a controversial round two reverse to France and last weekend's shock loss away to Italy. Head coach Townsend, who faced questions about his future after a chastening experience in Rome, is adamant his side are making progress. And he said, "We were in contention over the last couple of weeks, which has not been the case before in the championships. We would have been more in contention if we'd been awarded that try against France. So I think the evidence is there. We are still searching, like any team, to back up performances. It is difficult during the Six Nations. Every team has found that. And in particular, this Six Nations with the competition and the quality of the teams we were up against. If you don't get your performance spot on, then you're going to be really challenged to win a game. We have to be at our very best every time we play." Scotland have not won the championship since winning the final five nations in 1999. Hugh Jones' late try offered hope of ending on a high, but it proved to be a consolation as Ireland held on to retain their crown. Co-captain Finn Russell, who kicked 8 points at the Aviva Stadium, spoke of mental frailties undermining his country's development following the largely positive performance. While head coach Townsend hailed Scotland's tenacious defensive display as their best in years, he concurred with the assessment of his influential fly half. "Yes, I agree with him. It happens in every sport," he said. "The mental side is the same as the strategy, the same as the skill side, the physical side. Teams will have moments that go against them. Every team in this championship will have had it. And it could be focus. It could be how quickly you react. We have had chances to win all our games. The three games we lost were all within a score. That's even more disappointing for us. We felt we should have won against France. We underperformed against Italy. But we performed well against Ireland. And we performed well in the two victories. Two wins is not what we set out to do, but what we believe this team are capable of achieving." Report by Ed Elliott.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at QNReview and to tell your friends about our service.